Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to our post-results teleconference for the quarter ended September 30th, 2024. For today's call, we have with us Dr. Sharvil Patel, Managing Director, Mr. Nitin Parekh, Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Arvind Bothra, Head of Investor Relations, and Mr. Alok Garg from the Managing Director's Office. Let me now give you a broad overview of the developments during the quarter. I'm happy to inform you that we delivered strong double-digit growth during the quarter on the back of sustained growth across all our key businesses. Our India branded formulations business continued to outgrow the market with 10% year-on-year growth, driven by healthy volumes and contribution from new products. The consumer wellness business continued to see robust demand in all categories. The U.S. formulations business continued its upward journey with a robust year-on-year growth driven by volume expansion and new products launched over the last 12 months. The international formulations business, comprising of the emerging markets and Europe, also delivered strong growth on the back of resilient demand across markets during the quarter. With that, let me take you through the financial numbers for the quarter gone by. We registered consolidated revenues of 52.4 billion rupees, up 20% on a year-on-year basis. EBITDA for the quarter was 14.6 billion rupees, with a growth of 28% on a year-on-year basis. Our operational profitability continued to improve as the EBITDA margin for the quarter stood at 27.9%, which is an improvement of 170 basis points on a year-on-year basis. Improvement in EBITDA margin was despite 185 basis points year-on-year increase in our R&D spend. Net profit for the quarter has gone up by 14% on a year-on-year basis, despite increase in tax expenses due to certain one-offs, and stood at 9.1 billion rupees. We had a net cash position of 25.9 billion rupees as at 30th September 2024, as against the net cash of 8.6 billion rupees as at 31st March 2024. Now, let me take you through the operating highlights for the second quarter of FY25 for our key business segments. Our India geography, which comprises of formulations and consumer wellness businesses, accounted for 38% of the total revenues during the quarter and grew 10% year-on-year. As mentioned earlier, our branded formulations business in India grew faster than the market during the quarter with 10% year-on-year growth. The business outpaced the market growth both in the chronic and acute segments. Portfolio of key pillar brands and innovation products registered strong volume growth, driving the overall performance during the quarter. We launched 12 new products, including line extensions, with four first-in-India launches. The business grew faster than the market in key therapies of cardiology, gastrointestinal, respiratory, anti-infectives, and super specialty therapy of oncology. On the super specialty front, we continued to hold leadership position in the nephrology and oncology therapies. Contribution of chronic portfolio has increased consistently over the last several years and stood at 41.8% as per IQVIA MAT September 24, an improvement of 400 basis points over the last 3 years. Our consumer wellness business recorded revenues of 4.9 billion rupees, up 12% on a year-on-year basis, primarily led by strong volume growth of 8.4%. Both the personal care segment and the food and nutrition segment performed well, driving the overall performance of the business. Our U.S. business accounted for 47% of the consolidated revenues during the quarter, with revenues of 24.2 billion rupees, up 30% year-on-year. We launched four new products during the quarter. We filed eight additional ANDAs and received approval for nine ANDAs, including three tentative approvals during the quarter. On the international markets front, all key markets delivered robust growth during the quarter, despite ongoing political and economic challenges in some countries. Overall, the business posted revenues of 5.4 billion rupees, up 20% year-on-year. On the operations front, the U.S. FDA issued an Establishment Inspection Report, the EIR, with a VAI status to our transdermal formulations facility located in the Ahmedabad SEZ against an inspection conducted in the month of July 2024. During the quarter, the U.S. FDA issued a warning letter to our injectable facility located at Jarod near Baroda. We are working closely with the agency to implement necessary corrective action and preventive actions for early remediation of the facility. Now, this concludes the business review, and I would now request Dr. Sharvil Patel to take you through the key drivers across businesses as well as initiatives in our innovation program. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nayak, and good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. It's a pleasure to have you all today on the call. We are pleased with our performance during the quarter and the first half of this fiscal year. All our business continued their momentum from their previous fiscal and delivered healthy growth numbers. We are on track to achieve our aspirational growth and profitability for the fiscal year of 2025. We remain committed to augment our innovation efforts to drive long-term growth across all our businesses and generate improved outcomes for all our stakeholders. On the India formulations front, our branded business delivered double-digit growth on back of strong execution. Our sustained thrust on innovation led by our patient-centric approach has enabled us to build a healthy pipeline of novel and differentiated products and solutions aimed at fulfilling varied unmet healthcare needs of our patients. Consumer wellness business continued to witness healthy demand across categories, indicating sustained consumer preference for our brands. Our R&D capabilities continue to be at the forefront, helping us to launch new products and extensions to capitalize on emerging consumer trends. The recent acquisition of Natural India Private Limited, a leading player in the health snacking category, which is a fast-growing segment, will enable us to offer more product choices to the health and wellness-conscious customers. In the U.S., we have built significant capabilities to enhance patient care and treatment options in the form of comprehensive generics products portfolio, specialty play through LiqMeds acquisition, and investment in rare diseases space. This, coupled with strong customer relationships, a pool of manufacturing facilities with capabilities to produce diverse dosage forms, and an agile supply chain, will ensure sustained growth trajectory for the U.S. business going forward. On the international markets front, the focus remains on growing the business in chosen therapy areas across key geographies by leveraging our global R&D portfolio of differentiated and complex generics, as well as specialty products. During the quarter, we forayed into the animal-free fermentation-based protein business by forming a JV with Perfect Day Inc. through the acquisition of a 50% stake in Sterling Biotech Limited. The JV will establish a state-of-the-art manufacturing facility that will cater to the global markets. It will accelerate the production of high-quality and eco-friendly protein products, reduce environmental impact, and cater to the growing consumer demand for fermentation-based and ethically sourced nutrition. Post the formation of the JV with Perfect Day, we entered into a business transfer agreement with the JV to acquire its API business. This business has a fermentation-based products portfolio with the capacity to produce 1,600 kiloliters of API, hence a very good strategic fit for us. Our innovation pipeline across different areas continues to make progress and achieve desired milestones. With this, let me share some material developments on the innovation effort during the quarter. On the NCE front, our data monitoring and follow-up is ongoing post the completion of a patient recruitment for the phase IIb/phase III clinical trial of Saroglitazar Magnesium for PBC indication, and also the phase IIb clinical trial of Saroglitazar Magnesium for the metabolic dysfunction associated steatohepatitis, known as MASH, indication for the US market. We completed phase 2A clinical trials of Usnoflast in India for amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, ALS, indication during the quarter. The molecule was well tolerated in a short 12-week phase 2A trial with target levels achieved in both plasma and cerebrospinal fluid of ALS patients. It showed favorable trends towards reduction in neurofilament light chain, an established biomarker of neurodegeneration in the CSF of ALS patients. Improvement in ALS function rate scale, ALSFRS-R, and slow vital capacity were also observed. We initiated a phase 2 proof of concept trial of desidustat in partnership with the ICMR in patients with sickle cell disease. The partnership marks a pivotal step towards developing new therapies for combating sickle cell disease. In the biotech R&D space, we completed patient recruitment for a phase 3 clinical trial for one of our biosimilars, and the follow-up has also been completed. We also completed preclinical tox studies for one of the biosimilars and applied for clinical trial permission to the review committee on genetic manipulation. On the vaccines front, we completed phase 2 clinical trials for hepatitis E vaccine during the quarter. Recently, in the month of October, typhoid conjugate vaccine, which is known as Zyvac TCV, received in-principle acceptance from the WHO. With this acceptance, Zyvac TCV is now eligible for purchases by the UN agency. Thank you, and now we can start with the Q&A session. Over to the coordinator for the Q&A.
Thank you very much, sir. We will now begin question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask question may raise your hand from the participant tab on your screen. Participants are requested to use headphones or earphones while asking a question. The first question is from Kunal Dhamesha.
Hi, sir. Thank you for taking my question. The first question is on the tax expense. I think Nitin sir mentioned that there are some one-offs. So can you highlight quantify the one-offs and how should we expect the ETR to pan out for the rest of the FY25?
So effective tax rate for the year would be 24-25%. One-off refers to one provision in terms of one-time MAT credit taken last year, which reduced the effective tax rate. And also in this year, the R&D spend in the different entities across globe, where the tax rates are different, that has pushed the rate a little bit. But this is only quarter phenomenon. For the year as a whole, it will get equalized to 125%.
Sure, sir. Thank you on that. And just continuing on the R&D expense, which was obviously meaningfully above our the range that we have suggested. So how should we think about R&D? Is it some one-time trial cost which is factored in this quarter? And should we expect normalization from here? Or and what's the outlook beyond FY25?
So as I said, R&D spend on a quarter basis is difficult always to estimate. But the guideline for the full of FY25 is around 8% of revenue is what we believe will be our R&D. And going forward also, I think at least for the near future, we are looking at the same percentage.
Sure, sir. And one last, with your permission, on the guidance, we had suggested something like high teens top line growth guidance and year on year improvement in EBITDA margin for FY25. So are we still sticking to that? Is there an update there?
Yeah. We are ahead of our estimates.
So is there a new estimate or new guidance that you would like to give, or we should?
No, we are comfortably, we should be able to achieve the estimates.
Sure, sir. Thank you. I have more questions. I'll join back the queue. And all the best.
Thank you.
Next question is from Neha Manpuria.
Yeah, thanks for taking my question. Just on the two acquisitions, that we announced, the first one as a part of the wellness business, how big is this business that we've acquired, and any other details you can give? And the second one on the Perfect Day JV, Is this for the CDMO piece that we are setting up this facility? By when can we expect commissioning of this facility as a part of the JV? That would help, please.
So on the consumer health front, the business that we acquired of the Right Bite Max Protein and its range of products is about 130 crores in annual revenue. And obviously, it allows us to play in the healthy snacking. And we have always indicated that we would like to play in the protein malnutrition/nutrition space. So this gives us a good area to enter. The brand is obviously a market leader in its category with strong growths and continues to be a leader also in all segments of whether it's general trade, e-commerce, modern trade also. So we are quite excited with the opportunity. With respect to our joint venture related to Perfect Day, it is going to be, I mean, in a way, it is, you can call it as a CDMO because it is going to do development also. So it's not only manufacturing, but develop and manufacture large scale fermentation of the protein isolate of milk, which is the whey. And we do believe that this will be a large global opportunity with large global consumers who have already tested and have looked at making this as part of their resilient supply chain. So we see it as a tremendously large opportunity to have an animal-free derived milk, protein product, which can also have a significant ESG benefit.
And by when can we expect the commissioning of this facility and, any capex that you would want to highlight on the manufacturing facility?
Yeah, so I think more details we can give over a period of next couple of quarters, but we do hope to start the construction of the facility in the next 2 months.
Okay. And my second question is, on the gross margins. Obviously, we have seen the benefit of, our US pipeline reflect on the gross margins. But if you were to look at gross margins of the base business, is there anything that has materially changed between, from last year, to drive the significant improvement besides, the high value launches that we have in the US, in the gross margin? And what's the sustainable level of gross margin that I should look at, beyond this year?
So on the US, as I said, it's all because of the portfolio. So one is the base business, which continues to still grow despite the different challenges that we hear about in the US. But one thing which is good is our base business continues to grow. We are quite disciplined when it comes to how do we do business in terms of financially, are we making sure we are doing the right product at the right price and right margin. So that continues and it's quite healthy. And we still continue to have a lot of near-term opportunities over the next 1 to 2 to 3 years where we are going to have major big launches. So we are looking to obviously continue to build our portfolio in the US and continue to make sure that we not only continue our base business, but also have products where we will see exceptionally good returns also.
Understood. And these opportunities would be as large as, Mirabeg Magron was for us in the next 1 or 2 years?
So Mirabegron will still continue for the coming financial year. And post that, we have already said that if in FY27, we have two large major launches. So we would continue to see an uptick in the business until FY28-29.
And sir, last on Mirabegron, any comment on turn in events when it comes to the litigation, and what should be the timelines, or if not the timelines, the events that we should look for? Your view on what's going on that litigation front?
Yeah, so I think it's always litigation is unpredictable. So I think it is not something imminent. It is at least a few quarters, 1 or 2 quarters out. So I don't think we will have anything more credible in the short term from our best estimate.
Got it. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you. The next question is from Bino.
Hi, Hi, good afternoon. Just to follow up on Murbitrack, Shrilbhai, can we get some idea quarterly Murbitrack run rate? Is it pretty much the same QOQ, 1Q, 2Q, and will it continue similar going forward?
Sorry, can you repeat the last part? I didn't hear you well on Mirabegron.
Mirabegron. My question was, is the quarterly run rate similar for Q1 and Q2, and is it likely to be the same going forward for the next few quarters?
I think it's the run rate is going up, the conversion is also going up. So we would start to see better numbers as a quarter.
Coming to Asacol HD, the competitor has launched the product, I believe. What are you seeing on the ground? Any price erosion, market share loss, etc.?
Yeah, so we are seeing competition in the market, and currently we are what we are seeing is we are, I mean, as per our assumption, we are, I would say, in a good place in terms of what we assume would be market share loss and also price loss. So that is our as per our estimates, and you'll get to see that impact in quarter three this year. Also, yeah, the speed of it has been a little slower, so that has been good for us. Speed of conversion has been slower.
Understood. One last question on Revlimid, generic Revlimid. So you have this revenue bulked up in Q1 and Q4. So I assume Q4 of this year we will see again, and possibly Q1 of next year. So, but coming into FY26, you know, the exclusivity is lost before the Q4 of FY26. So should we assume that the generic Revlimid run rate would be roughly half plus some volume increase as per your agreement in FY26 versus FY25? How do we think about it?
No, we get more share in FY26, so we are still hoping to achieve. I mean, I don't think there'll be any drop in revenue.
And all that will be booked in Q1?
Q4, Q1 is always our expectations.
Yeah, but in FY26, before Q4 will
Yeah,
be
FY26 will most only be Q1.
only be Q1. Still, there won't be a YOY drop.
No.
Understood. Thank you. I'll jump back to you.
Thank you. The next question is from Surya Patra. Hi, Surya, requesting you to unmute and ask your question.
Yeah, thank you, sir. Thanks for this opportunity and congrats for the good set of numbers. My first question is on the gross margin again. See, this quarter, obviously, we have not seen the benefit of the Revlimid, but and Revlimid is a kind of a sizable opportunity, what we have witnessed in the previous two quarters. And although that is not there, though there is some benefit of Mirabegron is visible, but the gross margin is remaining as it is, like Revlimid contributing gross margins. So what is driving this or this quarter? Because you are also indicating Mirabegron QOQ would not be significantly large enough. So what is driving this?
So obviously Revlimid is down versus the last quarter, but the uptake on on Mirabegron continues. So I think I did say Q on Q there is an uptick, not stable. So we are seeing improvement. And but in quarter three we will see obviously the impact on Asacol, which was less in the last in this quarter. So yeah, that is the current state. And again, as I said, quarter four will again become very large because of generic Revlimid.
Yes. And whether you have indicated about Mirabegron FY26 remaining a kind of strong year as well, sir?
I mean, it's always based on litigation and what happens. But as with our best estimate today, if it continues, it'll remain important.
Okay. So, regards the US business, see, since long that we have been talking about a series of kind of complex product opportunities, including the in-licensed ones. And just in your opening remarks also, you mentioned about key complex product opportunities for the near future. Could you give some sense about the kind of pipeline opportunity that we are talking about?
Yeah, so I think some obviously we have already spoken of like the palbociclib generic version or the
Even Opsumit.
Uriosegwit also, which is also settled. So those are more sure and finite in terms of launches. Beyond that, in terms of our partnership, we have also spoken about a large franchise that we're trying to create on the 505(b)(2) and generic injectable side. And we announced recently, if you had read also, we announced a Gerodium,
Exactly. Yes,
product.
MRI.
Similarly, we are seeing a few more 505(b)(2)s that we are looking to file and launch immediately. So I think we have a healthy pipeline of in-licensing products, which we will get to see. On cabozantinib, obviously, the judgment was not completely in the, it's partly good, partly not in favor. So that appeal will continue and we'll see how that goes. But despite that, I think on the BD&L efforts, we are seeing a significant traction in being able to license high value or limited competition or even 505(b)(2) with patent life kind of products. And that is only getting better. So I would say over the next 3 years, we would see a significant value from the BD&L opportunity beyond what we are obviously filing ourselves in terms of first to file and day one launches.
Is it possible to share some more color about the Vivid Pharmaceutical in licensing arrangements about this gadolinium and MRI injectable?
So as I said, it's right now for two of the products, and
Good.
upon our approval, we will commercialize these products. And
And
we have created a capability of a sales team in the US to be able to do some of these things also.
how big this opportunity could be, sir? It is a genericization opportunity. It is a kind of NDA opportunity.
It's limited competition. I don't think there is a generic version today in the market.
Okay.
Exact size of the opportunity, I won't be able to today give you an estimate, but it will be niche but valuable.
Okay. Just last one question, sir, about the animal health business, what we have been aspiring for and taking some interesting strides on that front. So could you give some sense what is the kind of over the next 3 year period, let's say, how important and how sizable this could be?
So as I said, for us, US, we have decided that we are going to make we have focus on US. So we have three, four legs of growth that we are targeting in the US and participating in a larger ecosystem. One is obviously the generics business where we are large at scaling up injectables, which is our second area that is scaling up. Also launching competitive generics where you are late to market, as well as also now the animal health products, and we are creating a complex, I mean, products which are good, valuable, where we are sort of first generic into the market, like we are on the brand side or on the generic side, human generic side. Also launching complex technology-driven products in the animal health space. So that will be the other leg of growth for us. And finally, obviously, on our rare and specialty product is the final area where we are seeing a significant scale-up on Sentinel. Coming up and becoming in the next 2 years valuable, and also obviously our own pipeline of our NC molecule, which will be more future driven. So it's a basket of business that we'll do specific only to the animal health. It's done very well. It's ahead of our estimates on margin and it's done good. So we hope to continue to invest behind it and build it. As I said, we are a serious player in this. Not only do we do R&D, we also do manufacturing and then obviously sell. So we have built an end-to-end capability, and Zydus generally builds the end-to-end infrastructure to be more relevant and long-term player in the US. So we hope to remain a long-term committed player in the animal health space in the US.
So, yeah, thank you. Wish you all the best.
Okay. The next question is from Kunal Dhamesha.
Hi, sir. Thank you for the opportunity again. I just missed the name of the second product which would be important for us in the US apart from the palbociclib. Can you please share that?
Riociguat.
Riociguat. This is the brand name or
Molecule.
okay. Sure. And sir, on the typhoid conjugate vaccine, which where we have received the WHO pre-approval, if you could share something on the total addressable market and how are we planning there, and what else do we have in pipeline to kind of make this business more sustainable?
Yeah, so I think currently on TCV, UNICEF is obviously with the approval on pre-qualification, we can participate in the UNICEF tenders. UNICEF is the largest procurer of TCV vaccine. And over in this coming year, obviously, we will participate in the annual tender. The annual tenders generally range from 80 to 150 million doses. So we hope to take a small percentage of that share, and that could be very meaningful and sizable for the organization. Beyond TCV, we are also looking forward to also getting our MR vaccine qualified very soon. So once that happens, that will be also an opportunity for the UNICEF tenders. But beyond that MR, there is also an India tender coming up very soon, and we are hopeful we will also participate in that tender. So I think finally, I would say that in terms of meaningfully scaling up vaccines, we are going to start to see that from FY26 and FY27.
Sure, sir. But do we have any, aspirational target in mind that we want to scale this business to some number, based on the pipeline that you have right now?
So as I said, the opportunities are very large because when I talk about just for TCV, it's a 80 to 150 million doses tender volumes, and it's over a period of 2 to 3 years. So I think, as I said, from our revenue and what revenue we have today, it will be quite meaningful. But the scale up, I think we can only talk about once we win certain tenders. But these are not small tenders, and the competition is only between one or two or three players. So we believe that we can definitely take a small part of that tender if meaningfully and become sizable.
Sure. And sir, this tender you said it's for 2 to 3 years. So is it up for a renewal now in this year?
Yeah, I think we will see that in this coming FY26, there will be a tender on TCV, and then following year probably MR. So.
Sure. And sir, one question on the US business in this quarter. Would you have seen any negative pricing action on Asacol? The market share loss might be more visible in Q3, but is there any shelf stock adjustment that we would have taken in our revenue for Asacol?
I think larger impact you'll see in quarter three, but yeah, we would have taken some in quarter two also.
Sure, sir. And beyond let's say FY25, for FY26, any key products? Because palbociclib and maybe the other product that you talked about is slightly longer term opportunity. But from FY26 perspective, would you like to share any key products that we might be having in our pipeline?
Yeah, so FY27 and 28 obviously are the 2 years where you will see the other two. In FY26, we have our obviously our internal pipeline of products that is going to be important. We'll see quarter one Revlimid also, which will be important. And then we are going to see a full year of the 5-5B2 on the whole sitagliptin franchise, which would be quite meaningful. And we can talk about it more in the fourth quarter. But we believe that will be a very important and significant value creator for the as an important class for 5-5B2 with success. And then, as I said, we do have some impending launches in on the injectables front, also a 5-5B2 injectables if we succeed. So there are quite a few products that are lined up for FY26. But I would say the bigger chunk of products will come in 27 and 28. But we are still seeing FY26 also in terms of maintaining our current base of business.
Sure, sir. Thank you and all the best.
Thank you. The next question is from Harsh Shah.
Yeah, good afternoon, sir. So my first question is on the overall direction of the business. You have partially answer the question. Just
Harsh, sorry, but we're finding it very difficult to understand you.
is this better?
Yeah.
So part of the question you might have answered, but just wanted to get a bit of more clarity in terms of the traction of the overall business. For H1, of course, we have overshot on the guidance. But now, as we stand today on the higher base of revenue with the peak of Revlimid almost behind us, and then Mirabegron and Cabozantinib having its own challenges, how do you see FY26 and FY27 panning out in terms of growth and margin? If you can, share some light on a bit of FY26 and 27.
So our guidance is FY26. We will in the US we will see growth over FY25, and which is depending on whatever portfolio. And this is despite Asacol competition, and that is our current guidance. And FY27 and 28 are obviously meaningfully very large because we have large opportunities where we have short launches coming up, where we are day one exclusive. So the trajectory from at least from this point of view and guidance is this. While Asacol of course is the now challenge, Revlimid will still be a good quarter four, quarter one product, and going forward, Mirabegron still remains, it still is growing quarter on quarter. So I don't see any slowdown on Mirabegron.
And on margin front, we will stick to 27% plus kind of a number, or we might see some erosion there.
No, we hope to maintain our FY25 margins of 20. I mean, guidance of
guidance
27
that
and
you have given of 100 to 150 basis point over last year.
Yeah,
that we continue.
Okay. And a bit of qualitative question: with the U.S. elections behind us now, and the talks about this new government coming in, do you foresee any major challenges, any re major regulatory challenges from what has been the policy of the new government that will be coming into effect?
I mean, I would not be the right person to answer that, but today India, in the US, 60% of what is consumed in the US is made in India in terms of prescription volume. So I would say we are in a good place to continue to build on that.
Okay, sure. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is from Bino.
Hi, thanks for taking the question again. Just two follow-up questions. One on the tax rate. For this year, you have guided to around the 24 to 25%, but that is much higher than previous last 2 3 years consolidated tax rate. Of course, this year, this quarter, we had some one-offs. But FY26, will it come down back to around 20 21%, which was earlier tax rate, or will it stay high at 24 25%?
Earlier, we got benefit of MAT credit available, but over a period of time, we have started utilizing them, so we'll not be left with more MAT credit now. Also, the benefit which we have for backward area in Sikkim, that also in somewhere in 26 and 27 is not going to be there. So we will be then, coming into normal tax rate. Having said so, because while we look at the consolidated tax rate, it constitutes of different entities having different kind of tax rates, and therefore you may find something here and there, 1% plus minus, but on the whole, that is we're guiding for 24 to 25% kind of effective tax rate.
Understood. Shamit, by this Riociguat, is that your own product or a partner product?
Partnered.
Okay. And would you be the only, would it be a sole exclusivity launch?
Yes.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Next question is from Rahul Jivani.
Yeah, hi sir. Hope I am audible.
Yes.
Yeah, sir. Sir, on the sitagliptin 505(b)(2) opportunity, which you spoke about for next year, sir, next year the sitagliptin generic market also opens up in mid 2025, and there are already, let's say, around 8 to 10 generic companies who have tentative approval on the product. So with the generic market opening up on sitagliptin next year, so what kind of attraction do you think you would be able to garner for your 505(b)(2) product?
So two things. One is it's not 25, it's 26, the patent. So maybe you can check. I'll also check again, but it's not for 25. So
Sure.
we have still one more year. And we have, as I have always said, that yeah, so the opportunity we are seeing is obviously launching our branded franchise of sitagliptin. So obviously FY26 will be the most meaningful year. But going forward, that we have a long-term contract with the government, US government, for supply for 3 years, which will continue even after genericization. And also, because we're building part of the branded business, we hope that post-genericization, some part of it we may able to manage share. But leaving that aside, at least the government business is going to continue for a longer period of time. And maybe the FY26 may be the larger opportunity on the retail side, which may not be substantial in 20 in the next year, but for sure the coming year will be quite meaningful, which we can obviously explain more in quarter four also.
Sure, sir. And this government channel, how big is this on sitagliptin?
It's a valuable business for the company. It's what becomes a good molecule for us just on that business.
Sure, sir. And we would need to put up a sales force for this 505(b)(2) product, or would you market it through the team which Sentinel might have?
No, we don't need any marketing teams. As I said, we can
Sure.
give you more flavor in a by quarter four, but we are seeing some very good opportunity on it.
Sure, sir. Thank you. That's it from my side.
Thank you. Next question is from Damayanti Kerai.
Hi, good afternoon. I hope I'm audible.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. So my first question is, you mentioned about like good launches lined up, especially in 27 and 28. So can you update us? Will that include a few transdermal products also, I think, which we have talked in the past? And if you can update us on what is the current portfolio looking like in terms of transdermal supplies, how do you see scale up? And similarly, how do you see your injectable portfolio building up over next few years in terms of sales?
Yeah, so we have total of 8 transdermal filings so far. We have, out of which we have 2 pending approvals left. Also, this one is certain, the other one is may not be certain. From our point of view, we just recently, I mean, we already have the estradiol combo pack that is already launched in the market. Before that, we obviously had already one transdermal launch. Recently, we did launch scopolamine transdermal patch. And going forward, we hope to add other twice weekly estradiol, which is also approved, but we need to scale that up, and clonidine as the future product. Beyond that, we also have some more hormonal patches that are under development and to be filed, which will get launched. So that's where we are on the overall transdermals business. On the injectable side of the business, as I said, we continue to file complex drug device combination products in the US. And so that will be one. Beyond that, obviously, we are actively licensing injectable products, whether it is in the contrast media range for radiology, or some of the niche like the dyes that we have licensed, where we launch methylene blue, future on indocyanine green, and few more colored dyes in the future. So we have a whole host of differentiated niche products also in the injectable side, which we will launch beyond obviously the large drug device combination products that are also being filed.
Sure. So currently, to your total US sales, I assume injectable sales are very small in terms of contribution. Can you just give us like how much is currently coming from these products?
So as I said, I think for us, and I tried to also talk a little earlier, I think we are looking at a whole US, when we talk about, we look at a portfolio and we don't differentiate like injectables, orals, or all of that because we are running it as a portfolio of choices of products that we do. So it will it, but I can definitely say that injectables in the next 3 years will obviously scale up from today's level and become more meaningful. But I think for us, it makes sense more to talk about the overall portfolio rather than dosage form because we don't do business like dosage form because it's very similar ways of selling.
Sure. Just want to understand one more point in transdermals. So, what we understand in these market, I guess incumbents have largely stable market share, right? Few incumbents, and then they have certain market share. So, say you enter that market, so is it like easier to take market share from the existing players, or here like it's more gradual buildup, which you generally see?
Yeah, so it's always hard to take market share, whether it is in any product, because we want to take market share with certain margins. So it's always a thin line in terms of how whom you target and how you target. But so far, in the two products that we are selling, we have had decent success.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you. I'll get back in the queue.
The next question is from Nitin Agarwal.
Thank you.
Hi, Nitin, your voice is not clear.
Give me 1 second. Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Sir, thanks. Thanks. So two questions. One is A on the India business. Any thoughts on the business now? I think for the last few quarters now, we've been performing well in line and above the market. So has the business now sort of turned around for good in your assessment? And where do we see the business over the next, say, two couple of years? What will be the drivers for this business from here on?
Yeah, so I think, as I said, our aspiration is to grow better than market. We are in many quarters now doing as market or even better as we have demonstrated, and we hope to continue to deliver on stronger growth. There are two, three areas that is helping us. One is the portfolio reorganization and focus has helped us in terms of growth. So our innovative portfolio as well as our growth booster brands have both done extremely well. And as that pie of the business becomes larger and larger, that is contributing meaningfully. Beyond that, there have been important new launches that have been successful. So not only have the existing products been doing well, but the new launches have seen very strong, meaningful traction, and they continue to also drive future. Also, now our branded part of our specialty portfolio or chronic portfolio is now more than 41% of our overall business, and that's also improving its share in our overall pipeline, which also is allowing us to have a more sustained growth. So I think all in all of these things are giving us confidence that we can continue to deliver better than market growth, which is our aspiration.
And sir, in the domestic business, what proportion of business is really coming from your innovative products now?
It's a good question. I don't think right now we have a breakup like that we give out, but I think give us some time, we'll start preparing a different overall innovative pipeline portfolio overall. But I think in individual breakup, we don't give right now.
So, take that forward. So on the innovation portfolio or the innovation R&D portfolio, which is there, I mean, over the next couple of years, what are the milestones to really watch out for?
I think the milestones would be market share, obviously, for Saro, for Desidustat, for also the biologics that we are launching, and also some of the differentiated technology products where we are first to market. So if it's competitive, obviously it's market share. But beyond that, as I've always said, we do strongly believe that both Saro and Desidustat will obviously come in the top 50, but very hopefully soon in the top 25 in terms of brands of the company and we of the country, and we hope to continue to build that. So I think those kind of rank of molecule will become more and more impactful. going forward. And as I said, when we are launching biologics and other products, we are now, at least like I can talk about our Ujvira molecule, we have even higher share than the brand now, both by value and volume. And also, if you look at our overall share in the oncology space, we are now potentially the largest Indian oncology player and growing the fastest in this area. Similarly, if you see Desidustat, if you see the traction that we're getting on Saro, both by ourselves and our partners, we are seeing significant traction on these molecules. So the innovative pipeline is definitely driving a lot of meaningful growth and creating larger house brands.
And so on this innovation pipeline, you know, from a, wherever you're undertaking global trials, what are the what are the major milestones for you for on the global approval perspective for this product?
Yeah, so I think the nearest product of ours is Saroglitazar, which has finished recruitment for a hybrid phase 2 phase 3 trial, and next in quarter 2 of next year we will have a readout. So that will be one important milestone. Our Usnoflast in ALS will start a phase 2b trial. So that is still a little while away, but that will be the next milestone of starting the next clinical development journey. And on Desidustat, we are doing a trial in sickle cell anemia. And we're also looking for something in the US in the defense space. So that is the other important milestone if we are able to achieve. Beyond that, I think we have large phase four trials going on in India to show the safety and efficacy of the medicine, and a lot of publications that will all drive better value for the brands.
And sir, on the R&D spend increase which has happened, and you said it's going to be probably sustained around these levels, about, you know, which are the major areas where the R&D spends, the increased R&D spends are going towards?
So yeah, it's the, obviously the large, some part of, as I said, for us about 60%, 55, is half and half almost very soon. So half of it goes for development of our whole complex generic, better than generic kind of portfolio. And the remaining is for our biologics and NCEs and for US development. In that, the largest cost is developing Saro for US, followed right now because we are doing a large phase 3 completed, and that will continue. So yeah, that's the clinical development cost is one of the larger costs of the overall cost.
And so last one, sir, on the emerging market, I think you've had some pretty decent sequential growth in this business for the last few quarters now. I mean, A, what has really changed and how should you look at this piece? How should you look at this business going forward?
So I think a very strong execution, very strong portfolio of global products that are getting leveraged in all of these markets, a more focus on branded business, which is allowing us both consistency and profitability growth, right selection of markets. We also entered new markets now like UK, Australia, and we hope to add tactically more markets, including now Canada and others. So I think it's been overall, I would say, a strong strategy which led to a strong execution. And also going forward, we are seeing enough momentum of a product portfolio as well as markets still continuing to do very well. So in spite of obviously currency challenges, some geopolitical challenges that we do face market by market, but the portfolio of markets is allowing us to continue with this strong double-digit revenue growth, and more importantly, profitability growing faster than revenue.
Thanks. And if we could just finish the last one, sir, on the US market, I think if I just to get it corrected, you said that even the Mirabegron will continue to be a major product even for F26 for us.
Yeah, I think the current litigation continuing, it will still continue in FY26, but till how long, it's very difficult to predict right now.
Okay, sir. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is from Vivek Agarwal.
Hi, thanks for the opportunity. You talked about palbociclib is one of the key product in 27-28, right? So just want to understand two things on this product. So is it going to be a capsule or tablet? If you can clarify.
Tablet.
Okay. So in tablets, so is it likely to be sole exclusivity, or is it going to be you're going to share with a few other players, or how the things are going to be?
Our best estimate, it'll be sole, but there can always be an AG.
Okay, thank you. And in any color on capsules?
No, I don't think we I can I don't have any other update on it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. That's from my side.
Thank you. The next question is from Kunal Randeria.
Hi, good afternoon, sir. Sharul bhai, you mentioned timelines for saroglitazar. So, what would be the realistic timelines for US filing and launch? And how should we evaluate the potential considering that two players got approval this year and have a bit of a head start on you in the PBC indication?
Yeah, so we always, I mean, in our estimate, we had always assumed that we'll be third, or I mean, if lucky, third or fourth, but I think we could be third to the market. As I said, the major milestone is our initial readout of our data in the second quarter of next financial year. If everything goes well, then we will go ahead for then submission of the NDA by the third or fourth quarter, mostly the fourth quarter, and then about a year from there a launch. So maybe our estimate is quarter four of FY 2027. No, quarter four 20, God, 20, quarter four of 27 of calendar year 27 would be the launch, which would mean first quarter of the calendar year 27.
Got it. And how do you kind of expect the market to kind of take a turn? Because even these two products are fairly new. So, and I presume your product will also be like a second line treatment. So how do you evaluate this market by the time you launch this product?
Yeah, so I think obviously many moving parts on this. Right now, OCA is under regulatory action right now. So potentially these other products, I mean, this class of products will become maybe then the first line of treatment from second line. And the other part is it'll all depend on our data. So if our data is at par or superior, obviously, depending on that situation, we will know how we will fare. So very early to comment till we get to see our data. But if we are at par or better, obviously the commercial value is quite valuable. If we don't have a sufficiently equivalent data, then obviously we have to look at how do we commercialize it.
Right, and just one clarity on this. This will be the first indication for saroglitazar in developed markets, right? MASH and others will come later.
Yeah, this we are only targeting in US PBC right now.
Got it. Thank you and all the best.
Thank you. As this was our last question, I would like to hand the conference over to Mr. Ganesh Na Mr. Nayak for the closing remarks.
Thank you very much and have a nice evening and look forward to, and well, wish you a very Christmas and a very happy New Year and look forward to interacting with you in the month of February for our quarter three results. Thank you and good night.
On behalf of Zydus Lifesciences Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines and exit the webinar. Thank you.